How are you folks doing? I'm going to sit, kneel, stand, fall out of my chair. You know, as a professor teaching, I realize that all those strategies work in keeping people's attention. I think I'll start with kneeling. My talk is on development of end-user needs assessment instrument to improve the efficacy of EMR implementation. This is a continued work that I've been involved with. I had Devi Batu, who is a MD from India, do his MPH at our program. He did some of the preliminary work in terms of collecting some data. And actually, the data that I'm presenting today is Devi's data, although the instrument that was developed is the work that I did as part of my publishable paper in a postgraduate public health informatics certificate program that I just finished last year at the University of Illinois. I don't have anything to, you know, I'm not making any money on this. I don't have nothing to gain on this. Although I will make one disclosure, and that is I am voting for Obama next week. He's been very supportive of EMR, electronic medical records, and got to vote for a guy that, although I'm not a one-issue guy either, there's other things, other reasons why I'm voting for him. But EMRs and electronic medical records, electronic health records is really the wave of the future. This is just starting to happen across the country. Internet access now, home internet access for folks, middle class folks, is about 75% of the population. For people making under $25,000 a year, that home access now is 55%. It's the quickest adoption of any media that this country has ever had. And so where we're going now is where the electronic medical record will actually be a record that you own as a health consumer. So let me ask you to just make it a little bit more interactive here. Health insurance, okay, what's happening with that? How about auto insurance? So if you drive badly, what happens? They either drop you or they raise your rates. Okay, what happens if with your life insurance if you engage in tobacco use? They raise your rates. What's the new wave with regard to health insurance is if you behave badly, like engage in the seven sins, such as smoking, and what are the other six sins? Drinking, obesity, these are some of the issues that they're going to be looking at. They will actually increase your premiums because you fall in a higher risk. Now, that's a big brother type of thing going on there, but I do think that that's where things are headed. I think that electronic medical records, electronic health records, it will help us in terms of managing our health and get engaged in more preventive types of behavior rather than wait for people to get sick, develop diabetes, and so on. Okay. So this is the types of money that we're talking about and why we're moving in this direction. Healthcare spending, you know, $2.3 trillion in year 2007. It's projected to go up to $3 trillion in 2011, a little over $4 trillion in 2016. Right now, the United States, what gross domestic product we have left in this country, but in 2005, healthcare spent 16% of gross domestic product, and they're projecting that that number is going to go to 20% of gross domestic product by 2015, and that the current rate of 7 to 8% increases each year, we will reach 100% of gross domestic product by the year 2040, which is obviously we can't do that, and I think that's why we need leadership in the healthcare industry in our government to lead us in the direction of doing a better job in terms of keeping our healthcare costs down. So, some other things here. Medical errors, big issue in healthcare. We had 98,000 folks die. In each year, 98,000 people die due to medical errors. And we spend up to about $300 billion. Now, the bailout was, what, $700 billion? So we spend $300 billion each year in this country on health care that does not improve patient outcomes. And with many of the treatments that are prescribed are found to be unnecessary, inappropriate, inefficient, or even ineffective. And so there's quite a bit of not only over-prescription of certain types of medical treatments costing us all money. We also have numerous safety incidences that occur and these errors lead to lower health-related quality of life. So I don't know if you remember back, and if any of you ever listened to George Bush, but back in 2004, his State of the Union address, he envisioned EMR diffusion, essentially electronic medical record diffusion, to reach 100% of all medical centers and hospitals in the U.S. by the year 2014. We're not even close there. I'm just going to go right to the next slide. Diffusion of innovation as of the 2006-2007 time period, what we had was about 20 to 25% of hospitals and medical centers that were using EMRs or EHRs or were in the process of implementation. The problem that we're running into, and the reason why mission was not accomplished with George Bush's comment about us reaching that, 100% of all medical centers in 2014, is because the initial launch of electronic medical records in hospitals and medical centers are met with failure about 50 to 80% of the time. So success rates between 20 and 50% with the initial attempt. We're spending a lot of money on the front end trying to get these things launched. Some of these figures are based on the size of the organization. You would think that like medical centers that are affiliated with medical schools or universities would have a better way with this, and that's not the case. It's actually the smaller privately owned hospitals that do much better with EMR implementation. One of the things that Obama has been talking about is that if we have EMRs in the hospitals, that this is actually going to improve healthcare quality and safety. And but actually, the verdict is still out with regard to whether or not EHRs are actually cost effective. And that has to do with the initial implementation met with failure. See, what happens is, and it's very similar to what we do as public health practitioners, you can't take the software out of a box because it worked at another organization. You think that you take this out of the box, you then load it up on the computer system at the new hospital, and that this is then going to lead to effective rollout of the EMR. And the external validity issues are huge with regard to EMR implementation. Here are some of the issues that come up. Barriers to successful implementation. This comes out of a paper that I'm writing for the Online Journal of Public Health Informatics. There's significant software design compatibility issues where the EMR is not compatible with existing software systems that already exist within the hospital, medical center. Hardware inefficiencies and access issues where physicians have to walk where? All the way down the hallway to then log on to the laptop or the workstation and be able to do essentially the recording of the data. Organizational financial constraints. They had the money up front to do the initial launch, and then when they ran into all sorts of problems, end up running low on money. And then you have staff or organizational resistance to the change of going from paper pencil to electronic ways. And then there isn't enough technical support or staff training to be able to bring people along so that they can be proficient, efficient with the electronic medical record. And a lot of that, frankly, leads to this last one here, where the leadership within the organization just isn't there in terms of helping lead this implementation process in an effective way. So what we need to do, we need to include stakeholders in the implementation process, involve the leadership and the EMR mission linked to overall organizational goals and objectives, and we call that organizational change management. There's a bunch of literature out there. I think it'd be very useful in terms of being able to roll out organizational change management strategies when you're doing initial EMR launches. Having what is called a physician EMR champion, these are essentially key opinion leaders, if you will, people who have been nominated by their peers as being someone who can help them, tutor them, be able to get them up and running on the EMR. Staff training for EMR usage is critical. though it's very difficult and time-consuming. Difficult in the sense that physicians are very busy. Their bottom line is the more patients they see, the more money that they make, and that if you're now putting time into getting trainings, that takes away from their being able to generate revenue. Another issue is you need technical support 24/7, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, critical. And then you need to do a needs assessment and put it in a larger font, bigger bold font there, because, look, we know in public health practice that if we don't do a needs assessment, if we don't know what the unmet need is, what the met need is, we don't understand what the issues are with the systems that we're working with, we're gonna fall flat on our face. And it's frankly no different with regard to EMR implementation. And then we also need to conduct impact and outcome evaluation. I should have put down there also formative evaluation that examines EMR efficacy. I'm going to skip over that one. So what we did, we had subjects, and there are four different practice categories. And what's interesting is hospitals all run differently. Some are on salary, some are 1099 employees. But in this particular hospital that I'm going to talk about here is a sort of an example of what we did. They had active, adjunct, provisionally active, and consulting. And we went after the active physicians, essentially those that were there full-time, and sampled them. So they had 225 in number. They had 142 active physicians, and almost all of the sample that I'm showing today was from the active group. And so the needs assessment instrument has four sections. It has a very brief demographic section for the first section. The second section looks at their healthcare provider computer and professional background information. Third is Likert type items related to measuring those particular EMR components. And essentially what we do is we ask how important are these particular components in having in our EMR here at this particular hospital. The fourth section is measuring agreement with EMR goals, that our EMR should be like reducing medical errors. Our EMR should be provide secure access to reduce paper use. And so, and then down the list here, improving the coordination of care. So I've got all these different items that were generated from a very comprehensive review of the literature. And so we ran our first, we collected 50 physicians, 43 physicians and 7 nurse practitioners. That's the gender breakdown. Years in practice, we looked at age group. We also looked at years of computer use, which is an important variable. And then we also measured whether or not they used an EMR elsewhere, which we found to be a very important question to ask, and whether or not they've received EMR training at, in this case, Pocono Medical Center. And so here are some of the findings. These are just straight up central tendency data, means, standard deviation, and mode. And it gives you a sense of what they feel is important. So if you look at the top there, it says, how important are these components to an EMR here at Pocono Medical Center? And they really liked the lab results, transcribed reports. They weren't all that in favor of patient scheduling and admitting. And then when we asked why, well, they already have a separate system for that, so we don't really need that as part of our medical, our electronic medical record. Although down the road, that's going to be a problem. Some other questions we asked, how important, some of the more traditional stuff here, hospital chart review, ability review, discharge summary, so on, they felt very important. Look at the electronic communication with patients, and that was operationalized by having email access. And so in exit interviews, they said, what, patients having email access to my email? And that's why we received a very low importance rating there. But that gives you a sense, because a lot of the electronic medical records are moving in the direction of having access to your physician through emails and being able to communicate. I mean, after all, according to the Institute of Medicine, the consumer is supposed to be part of the healthcare team, right? And that they say that outcomes, clinical outcomes, are improved if patients are a member of the treatment team. So shouldn't they have email access if they're a member of the treatment team? 5 minutes? Okay. Some other questions we looked at, Pocono Medical Center should allow for these types of things, essentially getting at some goal statements, and all relatively high. I mean, you look at the standard deviation, that tells you just how much agreement there is across the different providers. I'm going to go quickly. Here's another slide looking at whether or not the EMR should allow for these. So this is really measuring like what the goal should be for this EMR. Okay, now, see if there's anything else that stands out. I'm being told they have like 3 to 5 minutes or so. What we found is, that's what happens when you put your, okay. Sorry about that, folks. I put my notes on the keyboard and it locked. I don't want to press numerous times because I'll go right by where I was. We looked at t-tests. We compared people who had EMR access outside and whether or not there was differences in how they felt. So one of the things we can do with this needs assessment is be able to compare previous exposure to EMR versus those that have never had, whether or not that has an impact on how they endorse certain items on the needs assessment service survey, whether or not it has an impact on their training needs. That's what this is getting at. And which particular items are more important for those that have had previous training versus, so again, I definitely want to get at the factor analysis, and if you don't know what a factor analysis it's essentially it takes all the items and correlates all the items at once, coming up with what is called factor dimensions or really scales, and I'll show you what these are. So factor dimension one, we did this Verimax factor rotation and we came up with essentially a scale. These items measured this construct called quality assurance and improving patient outcomes. So we could then run our demographic characteristics across these factor dimensions, if you will, and find out which specific healthcare providers are more receptive of this particular factor dimension versus those that are not. And then, of course, that would then lead to planning and being able to intervene so that we could have successful launch of the EMR. Okay, safety aspects with an EMR is a second one. And then we have physician order, electronic referral, and scheduling. All of those had KMO scores that were pretty decent, stating that these data set was factorable. These minor dimensions with eigenvalues that are a little bit lower, patient records and report summaries. This last one here, communication with outside agencies and patients. And one of the things that we're seeing in EMR, diffusion of innovation, is the movement towards the hospital having communication with outside entities such as public health reporting systems. And so traditionally trained physicians may not see the importance of that. But again, what we need to do is measure that, find out what their attitudes are, whether or not they think this is important. And then when the public health system say, well, you need to communicate with us in your disease reporting, in the training that you would provide to physicians, you'd be able to help them understand why that's important. So future work, right now we're collecting data at Sacred Heart Hospital in the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania. St. Elizabeth's Medical Center up in Utica, New York is actually scheduled to do their data collection in January, first part of January. We're in negotiation right now with St. Luke's Medical Center. Once we have an appropriate database, we're going to run demographic characteristics across the various factor dimensions. And then the purpose of all this is to develop an EMR, EHR instrument for the health informatics information technology field, which is our new SPIG here at APHA, and be able to have a needs assessment instrument that can be used in implementation of electronic medical records to help with the successful launch of these. Okay, so rush through that, but I'm finished.
Okay, we've got a little over 30 minutes left for Q&A. Yeah. Wanted to share time for each of the authors or each of the presenters. So, if you have a particular question, we'll take it. Okay. Or everybody can go eat dinner. No questions? Well, thank you for coming this afternoon. And
we have one back there.
Oh, sorry.
I just have a quick question for you related to your study.
Is there any program to try to introduce this from the medical school level so that physicians not coming out can be already prepared?
Good question. I'm not in contact with medical schools, but whether or not they're doing this as part of their training, that's actually a very good point. This would be a great, even in residencies, to be able to provide this training and for them to understand. They see the value in terms of lab orders and physician orders and prescriptions and even with referrals. And where we seem to run into some resistance is, why do I need to communicate this particular hepatitis B to the public health system? And how secure is that transmission? And why is it that I need to, so this is a public health network, if you will, and hospitals play a very important role in terms of being able to report disease outbreaks, influenza, for example, and if we get that into a centralized reporting system, we could really be on top of things. You know, in France, they have that down so well, they have the regression formulas developed so well that they actually do their outcome, influenza outbreaks, like a weather forecast. Based on the preliminary data, they say 3 weeks from now, we are anticipating this number of people in this geographic region to have influenza. And wouldn't it be great if the American system could move in that direction? I mean, Europe is way ahead of us.
Following up on this question, are you taking a look at the age or training of the physicians and seeing? Because I would expect to see a break in one.
Yes. Well, we're looking at it, but there's also often literature showing that the younger, fresh out of school is much more receptive to this.
Yep.
The older physician, part of it is that it takes time. I mean, think of any software that you pull out of the box that's pretty complicated. How long is it going to take for me? And usually physicians are always running to get their next task done, and so it's never enough time. So the hospitals need to build incentives in, financial incentives in, for physicians to get trained in this. And they have more leverage over physicians that are salaried as opposed to 1099, what do you call them, 1099 contractors that are not technically salaried employees of the hospitals. They bill separately. Those folks are even tougher to figure out a way to get the hook for them to come in and get the training.
But then Robert needs to go, isn't it? There are parts of the system that actually does the inputting into the system of the information that is needed. And the physician just pretty much dictates, because I know at my hospital, for the most part, the physician, all they do, the way they interact with it is they dictate.
My best, and I've had colleagues say, well, why can't, if it's worked at another hospital, I don't understand why it's not working at this next hospital. And it really comes down to the external validity issues. Think of an intervention that works well in a particular city, and then you say, well, this works so well, we're going to take this intervention, we're going to move it across to another state, and we're going to launch it in this other town. The dynamics are totally different. Mm-hmm. The organizational networks are very different.
Yep.
And what might work in one town doesn't work in another. Same thing with hospitals, that you go to another hospital and they'll say, well, we don't do it that way here. And so easy for you to have the programs written, but we don't do it this way here. So, and that's the problem. It's what works in one setting. There's a lot of things that medical centers do the same, but there's a lot of things related to EMR rollout that they do things differently. And it really creates problems from anything from they have this computing power, and most of the physicians come in at 10 in the morning or whatever time in the morning, finish by 1, they really tax the system. And it could be simple things like, I want to be able to do my lab orders, but I try to get into the system, it's slower than molasses, and I sit there and look at an hourglass on the screen and wait for this thing to open up. And that's a simple hardware issue, or it could be a software issue that it works, but it's just not as efficient with that particular hardware that they have at that particular hospital. Do anything from I have to walk now down to that table over there to be able to access my, why can't I have a PDA, or why can't I have some type of, Palm Pilot? needs assessment, and you, and especially if there's redundancy, or if there's a, there's maybe a more efficient way to get those documents, documentation done. Physicians, you know, when they're charting that number of hours a day, and they say, well, I've already entered this data already once in one other place, and that, you know, why is it that this can't be somehow interfaced or run a program so that I don't have to do this again? So that, that's clearly one of the major barriers for, you know, and people feeling good about their getting along.
Lack of internet.
You know, it's okay. There'll be, this is probably the fourth or fifth one that I've done, and the one that I've done before the meeting. So they went well. I think for us, one of the things that we're looking for this is that our information is primarily Northeast, so we need to we need to get to other parts of the country to customize the guide to make sure that it has issues that are regionally specific, and so that's why we're encouraging others to take a look at it, give us a objective. So we'll see where it goes.
Yeah, that sounds good. It's very interesting.
Good luck. All the best, all right?
Thank you very much for presenting. Have a great day.
Thanks.
Thanks for the EMR. I was talking with someone actually who's interested in
owns a transcription service.
Mm-hmm.
And she's also certified, credentialed, I'm not sure, to sell EMR.
Oh, really?
And one of her, so she for one of her clients, she did a comparison of, you know, if they picked an EMR system they were considering versus her service. And I thought she was going to say that, you know, the EMR was quality was so much better than the transcription, and it's the exact opposite. So her question is, how common is that? You know,
that the transcription's better than the,
right.
Well, it's really in some respects not, but it's in the short term very much so, because it's less complicated.
Well, she gave a couple of examples, like you know, drop down menu where the real choice is not there,
right?
And then another where you click on meds, so you click on a dose of a medicine, and then later you change and you increase the dose, but you don't unclick the old dose, so now it looks like they're taking two different doses of the same medicine. And so those kind of quality issues,
right?
You get this kind of garbage in, garbage out.
Right. She's responding to what I was saying earlier about the overwhelming majority, well, 50-80% of the time, they fall flat on their face with the initial. And
right.
You know, and it's interesting because the people doing this for a living come into the hospital saying, well, I've launched this hospital, I've launched that hospital, I've launched it. You know, and after a while, if you've done it enough, you start to realize that just because it worked somewhere else, it's not going to work here. And they start asking the right questions. But this is still very new. And so you've done three hospitals.
Yeah.
That, does that mean that you're
hospitals.
An expert
yeah.
now with the fourth? And the fourth may do things very differently.
Right. And well, the other thing she said that I was surprised with is that there aren't any standards. There's no national standards for EMRs or...
Right.
And you would think that that would be one of those. So the 2014 date, for example, comes out of the HIPAA legislation. You got that. And so the government says you have to do this by this date, which, of course, they don't give me any money to do it. But, you know, should they not say what this is, I'll walk out with you.
Oh.
But, yeah, no standards.